As I look out and see the number of people here, it seems that Anenu is an appropriate title in more than one way. Usually, we think of Anenu as us speaking to Hashem. But I see here that Anenu, people have cried out that they need help. And Nashim Tzidkaniyos have volunteered to come this morning and to give of their time to daven and to try and help their fellow Jews. What can I say to people who are already here and are already involved in such an act of chesed, in such an act of righteousness and helpfulness? So I thought perhaps to say, good job, keep it up. But Mrs. Wolper informed me that would be a little too short. So good job to keep it up, but we are going to have to go a little bit further than that. We're starting a period over the next 3 weeks, culminating in Tisha B'Av, where we're going to be intensely davening and asking Hashem for refuos, for yeshuos. We're going to be saying Tehillim, extra kavana and extra quantity. And so I thought that what we would do here today is just like a general reviews his campaign before he goes out to battle, and a businessman reviews his balance sheet before buying his competitor, we too should review our plan for the next 3 weeks. And we should see what it is in our plan, how it is that we propose to accomplish our desire to bring about refuos and yeshuos over the next 3 weeks. In order to do that, I've divided the plan into three parts: Tefillah, Tehillim, and Tisha B'Av. Tefillah is an interesting thing, because tefillah is inherently contradictory. On the one hand, Hashem wants our tefillahs very much. One doesn't have to delve very deeply into the Chumash or into the Navi to see how much Hashem values tefillahs. On the other hand, tefillah is a chutzpah, a tremendous chutzpah. Who is it that sent the illness or withheld the refu in the first place? The same Hashem that we're asking to change His mind. Change His mind. We say every morning that Hashem is perfect and everything He does is absolutely just and perfect, except for right now, we'd like for you to change your mind. So tefillah is inherently a contradiction. And furthermore, even if somehow we could come to Hashem and say, well, we'd like for you to change your mind, don't you think He already knows that? He already knows that we want that? So the whole idea of tefillah is contradictory. On the one hand, Hashem wants our tefillahs. On the other hand, it makes no sense for us to daven to Hashem. He knows what we want. And He's the one that gave us whatever we have in the first place. So the truth is, when we're little, we ask Hashem for things that fit. We ask Hashem for bicycles, toys, remote control cars, candy, remote control cars, personal bias there. As we get older, the things we ask Hashem for become more serious. Parnasa, health, children, shidduch. Don't we think that Hashem knows these things? That that's what we want? Do we doubt that Hashem knows what we want? When we daven and we ask Hashem for something, we start off in Shemot Esrei by praising Hashem. Then we ask for what we want. And then we thank and praise Hashem again. There's a reason for that. Our requests are sandwiched in between our recognition and emunah in Hashem. Because the purpose of davening is to be lehit paleil, which means to judge oneself. By davening, one is supposed to improve one's emunah and one's bitachon and one's connection to Hashem to the point where we can say, Hashem, please reevaluate our status and our request. I'd like a new judgment, please. I've davened, and I'm a better person than I was before. So I didn't get my bicycle this morning, or my remote control car, right? But perhaps now that I've davened, and I've worked on recognizing that Hashem runs the world, and that everything Hashem gives me is what I need, perhaps now I'm a better person. The purpose of tefillah is to improve ourselves. And while we improve our understanding and connection to Hashem, we can ask for a new judgment. That's what we didn't get yesterday, we can still ask for today. Because perhaps we're a better person today. And perhaps we're worthy of reconsideration. Now, that sounds great for tefillah in your house. Why does everybody have to come together as a group to do that? We could all stay home and do that, and certainly we wouldn't have to deal with parking or the $350,000 in gas it costs to get here. We could just stay home and do that. But tefillah in a group is better. Chazal tell us that, you know what, when a group of people davens, Hashem sometimes answers the whole group. On Rosh Hashanah, we have something called a din klali, or a din tzibur, and a din yachid. We have a judgment on the individual, and we have a judgment on the community. How is it possible that a community can suffer if it has a tzaddikim in its midst? The answer is, Hashem gave a judgment to the entire community. Some people in the community may or may not be worthy of that judgment. But a community that comes together to beseech Hashem is asking Hashem, you know what, look at what we're doing. We're coming together as a community. Judge us as a community. And even if some of us are found wanting, give us what we ask for as a community. And I'll tell you a little bit more of a secret about how that works. Nowhere in the Torah, in the Chumash, does Hashem say where the Beis HaMikdash is going to be built. It's always the Makom Asher Yivchar, the place that I will choose and I will designate. And we all know that David HaMelech came along and he determined where the Beis HaMikdash should be built, and he got all the materials together to start building the Beis HaMikdash, right? That was 400 years after the giving of the Torah. That's a really long time to keep a secret as to where the Beis HaMikdash is going to be. Chazal tell us, you know why we had to keep it a secret? Because people would fight over it. The kids would fight. Every shevet would want it in their territory. Every person would want it on his land. Everybody would want to argue over where it should be. So we see that some things don't change even in thousands of years. Everybody would have argued over it. So it was only when the entire nation had achieved a level of achdus and togetherness as a nation that Hashem would tell them where to build the Beis HaMikdash. Hashem knew the place the whole time and told the Navi. But until Klal Yisrael could come as one nation and want to build the Beis HaMikdash, they weren't allowed to know where it was. They weren't even allowed to know where it was supposed to be, let alone to build it. It took 400 years before Shaul and David were able to unite the fractious tribes into one strong nation, and only then did we merit to know where the Beis HaMikdash was. So coming together as a community gives us the chance to have a better judgment, and it gives us a chance to show Hashem, look, we're doing this be'achdus, together. In fact, Chazal tell us that the punishment for the Chet HaEgel, for the sin of the golden calf, was mitigated slightly by the fact that we did it together. Now, for some of us, that might sound odd. For those of us who have children, it's not odd at all. If you have children, what's the one thing that you really want? For them to be doing things together and not fighting. You don't care what they're doing together and not fighting. They could be out back throwing rocks into the neighbor's yard, but they're doing it together and they're sharing and they're taking turns and they're cooperating, and boy, that's just wonderful. So that's how Shem looks at us. He doesn't want his children fighting. We all got together and did the Chet HaEgel. We got a terrible punishment for it, but at least we did it together. So achdus and coming together as a community is a way to improve getting an answer that we want to our tefillos. So phase one, tefillah. But how does Tehillim get into here? Phase two is Tehillim. We could do all this and we could come and we could say 36 Shmona Esrays. Or we could say a huge tefillah written by beautiful, poetic, liturgically competent people, and it would just flow off the tongue. And instead we come and we say Tehillim. And there's not a single prayer in the entire book of Tehillim. Yet that's what we come here and say. Whenever we want something really big from Hashem, really big, we go to Tehillim, where there's not a single prayer. So why is that? In order to see what we're doing with this phase two of Tehillim, we have to have a little quick history of the Sefer Tehillim. Adam Arishon, first man after he did his chet, he was expelled from the Garden of Eden. He was expelled from Gan Eden. Adam Arishon, Chazal tell us, did teshuvah. He repented his whole life for that sin. And Hashem never accepted his teshuvah. And never allowed him back into Gan Eden. So Adam Arishon came back to Hashem and he said, okay, I have a backup request. I would like for you to give me the vision and the ability to see all the leaders of future generations. So Hashem gave him that ability. And Adam Arishon looked through all of the people to try and find somebody who would be able to bring people back to the original spiritual level that he had lost by being expelled from Gan Eden. And he looked throughout all of time in history, and he found one person, David HaMelech. The only problem was, in the vision that Hashem gave him, David HaMelech was fated to die as an infant. So Adam Arishon went to Hashem, and he said, I'd like to donate 70 years of my life to David HaMelech. Hashem accepted the offer. Adam Arishon lived to 930 instead of 1,000, and David HaMelech lived to be 70 years old. Now there were a lot of great people in between Adam Arishon and David HaMelech, and a lot of great people after David HaMelech. But Chazal tells us there are only three people in the history of the world that are able to have an influence on others enough to help them achieve the ultimate level of ruchnius, of spirituality. And Chazal gives us an acronym to remember those three people. Aleph, Dalet, Mem. Adam, which spells man. The Aleph is for Adam Arishon. The Dalet is for David HaMelech. And the Mem is for Mashiach. Say Chazal, those are the only three people that can accomplish this job. David HaMelech was a person who came as close to spiritual perfection as possible. But he saw that he wasn't going to be able to accomplish his goal of bringing the entire world along with him. So he decided, rather than continue that, he would give us an instruction guide. He would write down the manual for how to be a spiritual person in 150 lessons. And that book is the Sefer Tehillim. It's really difficult for us to picture someone like David HaMelech, because today our lives are very compartmentalized. In the days of David HaMelech, if you were a tzaddik, you looked at David HaMelech and you saw him as the tzaddik's tzaddik, the ultimate perfect tzaddik that you could look up to. If you were a Talmud Chacham, you looked at David HaMelech as the ultimate Talmud Chacham. If you were a general or a statesman, you looked at David HaMelech and you saw the ultimate general and statesman. If you were a musician and an artist, you looked at David HaMelech and you saw the ultimate musician and the ultimate artist. David HaMelech accomplished almost everything. But he couldn't bring us along with him, so he left us the guide. 150 chapters, 150 lessons. Each chapter, a lesson in something that we're supposed to learn about how to serve Hashem. It's not just flowery words, beautiful praises. Each one is a lesson. Some of them drawn from David HaMelech's life, some of them drawn from David HaMelech's knowledge, and some of them we don't know where he drew them from. But Chazal tells us by the age of 21, when David HaMelech was first anointed king by Shmuel and Avi, he was already a perfect tzaddik at the age of 21. He wrote as a guide, Sefer Tehillim. And he left us one other thing. He left us the idea of how to really, really, really want something. In order for Hashem to answer us, you got to really want it. David HaMelech really wanted more than anything else to build the Beis HaMikdash. And in fact, if you don't stop and think about it, you almost think he did build the Beis HaMikdash. Because we call it Beis David. The halacha says the only people that are allowed to sit down in the Beis HaMikdash are David HaMelech and his descendants. David HaMelech never saw the Beis HaMikdash. Yet it's written down that he's the one that gets to sit down in it. And then Avi calls it Beis David. And we call it Beis David in halacha. And David HaMelech didn't build the Beis HaMikdash. His son Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash. So how is it that it's David's Beis HaMikdash? I think we should call it Beis Shlomo. Beis Shlomo built, David prepared all the materials and gave over the instructions, but Shlomo had to hire the contractors and deal with all of that. Whoever dealt with contractors, that is worthy of recognition right there. I think we should call it Beis David Veshlomo. But we don't, we call it Beis David. The reason is how bad David wanted it. When Hashem told him that the Beis HaMikdash will not be built in your lifetime, the next sentence out of his mouth was, kill me now. He longed so much for the Beis HaMikdash that he wanted it to be built. He did everything short of putting it together. He davened every day, hour after hour, beseeching Hashem to build the Beis HaMikdash. He wanted it. He didn't just come and daven because it says in the words, he wanted it so badly that Hashem says, it's yours. You want it so badly, it's yours. No, you're not actually going to build it. That's a technicality. And in fact, Hashem decided to show Klal Yisrael that it was really based David. If you remember from Nach, the story that Shlomo HaMelech had a Chanukah Sabayis to dedicate the Beis HaMikdash. All Klal Yisrael came. Imagine after 400 and some years, we're finally fulfilling what it says in the Torah to have the Beis HaMikdash. We have a Melech who is a Tzaddik. This is a crowning moment in the history of the Jewish people, the likes of which are hard to imagine. Everybody was there. Millions of people in Yerushalayim. Shlomo HaMelech rides up on his horses with his Sefer Torah and his retinue of people and instructs them to open the doors to the Beis HaMikdash, and the doors won't open. I think I know that contractor. The doors won't open. They try everything. Force. They daven. They do everything. The doors won't open. There are millions of people standing there, and the king can't get the door open at the crowning moment of Jewish history. Until Shlomo HaMelech has an idea. And he says, open the doors in the merit of my father David. And the doors fly open. For all Klal Yisrael to see that it's based David. You know why? He wanted it. Every day when he dug down into his heart and soul, he said, this is what I want, Hashem. And I can't have what I want. And I can't bring everyone else along with me, so I'm going to leave something for you. I'm going to leave you a lesson in how to daven for something like a Beis HaMikdash, and I'm going to leave you 150 lessons in how to be the proper person. So, now we understand why phase one is, we all have to come together. And phase two is Tehillim. Phase three is Tisha B'Av. Now, of course, we can say Tehillim anytime. But the weeks leading up to Tisha B'Av are an especially auspicious time for us to take that lesson of David HaMelech and daven for all we want. Why is Tisha B'Av such a time? Why are the weeks leading up to Tisha B'Av a time that we should be especially saying Tehillim? In order to understand that, we have to learn two things about Tisha B'Av. The first is the answer to the following question. Chazal tell us that Tisha B'Av is a moed, a holiday, and that in the future, after Mashiach comes, it will be a joyous occasion. How is that possible? How could we celebrate with joy the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash? And not just the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the deaths of thousands and millions of Jews. A Yom Tov? Joyous? Will the tears that Mama Rachel cried along the road suddenly turn to tears of joy instead of tears over the death and destruction of all of her descendants? How is that possible? Chazal tell us Tisha B'Av is a moed. Moed, like Chol HaMoed. It really doesn't mean Yantif. It means it's an appointment. A moed is an appointment. A time when we of Hashem and of Hashem have agreed to get together and spend time with each other. A time of closeness and availability. You know, when a parent has to patch a child and send them to their room, a little child, the child thinks it's done. But the parent keeps peeking into the room to see how the child's doing. When a child's older, the parent has to give a punishment for some severe action that the child did. To the child, it's over. I got my punishment. But every time that situation comes around again, the parent is looking out of one eye to see what will happen. Will the child have learned the lesson and not do it again? Was my potch or my punishment effective? Tisha B'Av is a time when Hashem is looking in to see if his potch was effective. But how does that make it joyous? You know, we look back on Yetzias Mitzrayim, going out of Egypt, as such a basic fundamental thing of Judaism. Everything we do revolves around Yetzias Mitzrayim. So fundamentally, it doesn't take a huge leap of emunah and a huge leap of faith to think that going out of Egypt was a great thing. Now let me ask you a question. What about the guy who was born in slavery in Mitzrayim, lived 40 years being whipped every day by the taskmaster, and then died? You think he saw the big picture? You think he looked at Yetzias Mitzrayim and was able to see, oh, that worked out pretty good. We went out of Egypt and that sort of forged us into a people, and then we went into the desert and we got to go to our Sinai and we got the Torah. Wow, that really turned out pretty good in the end. You think he saw that? Or you think all he felt was the taskmaster's whip on his back and he had to trust that in the end it would all sort of make sense? Come lusid lovo, Chazal tell us, it'll make just as much sense to us. That person in Mitzrayim had no way to look back and see, oh, this slavery, it's helping us so we can come, we can become a nation, and we can get the Torah. That's a tremendous thing for us. We don't understand how this is helping us. But in the future, we will. And just like we look back and you see it's Mitzrayim, and we don't cry over all of the people that were whipped. We don't cry over all the people that were injured. We're happy and joyous that we see that all of it was part of Hashem's plan to help us. Come Lasid Lovo, we'll see that everything that happened on Tisha B'Av was part of Hashem's plan to help us. And when our Avinu Shebashamayim is looking in on us to see if the punishment is effective or not, he'll see us saying Tehillim and trying to grow. But we need one more thing solved about Tisha B'Av before we can put phase 3 together with our phase 1 of davening and our phase 2 of Tehillim. We know why the base of Mikdashes were destroyed. For example, the second base of Mikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, baseless hatred. So we should be doing Teshuva for that. Instead, we're going to act like mourners, and we're going to not take haircuts, and we're going to not listen to music, and we're going to come Tisha B'Av, and we're going to sit on the floor, and we're going to say Sakinus, and what in the world does any of this have to do with doing teshuva for the things that got the base of Mikdash destroyed in the first place? We're sad? Well, of course we're sad. We're sad anytime we do an aver and get punished. We don't mourn over it. We try and do teshuva. We should have an organization called Anti-Sinas Chinam, Avas Chinam, and we should be doing teshuva and running around and giving everyone unconditional love, and that should be our teshuva so we can get the base of Mikdash back. Instead, we're going to sit on the floor all day. How does that make sense? It's a very strange response. Where's the teshuva? Where's the Al-Chait? I don't see a single Al-Chait in the Tisha B'Av Siddur. I see a lot of fasting. I see a lot of sitting on the floor. Why? I'll tell you why. We didn't get a punishment. We got cut off from Hashem. He severed part of our relationship. We weren't punished. Hashem said he had enough and he threw us out of the house. Threw us out and said, "Don't come back until I'm convinced you're worthy of living in my house again." Severed the relationship. Sever the relationship. No Shechina. No base of Mikdash. We were being punished. We were being shown the door. We can't imagine what it was like in the times of the base of Mikdash. A person who could come to Yerushalayim, they could see the Kohanim, they could see the Levim standing on the steps singing, they could smell the incense, they could see millions of people coming to visit the base of Mikdash. That's all you had to do to get yourself charged up. We don't have any of that. We don't have any of that because we were thrown out of the house. What does that mean? There's a very beautiful statement that I think explains it. When Adam Arishon did his sin and he ate from the eights, Hashem came and he said, "Ayeka, where are you?" Okay, now most of us have learned that Hashem knows everything. So therefore, Hashem knew where Adam HaRishon was. Now Chazal say he didn't want to startle Adam HaRishon. But I'll take a little bit deeper explanation. Ayeka, where in the world are you? You just cut yourself off from your Creator. Ayeka is a rhetorical question. I'll tell you where you are, said Hashem. You're nowhere. Without that connection to Hashem, people don't exist. I mean, we think we exist. We have our health, and we have our homes, and we have our parnassah, and we have simchas, and we have families, and we have all this. But Hashem says in one word, Ayeka, where is all that? Where are you? You're either with me and connected to me, or you're on the way out. Can we really say that we have a solid, good existence today? An existence without the Shekhinah? Is it a good existence where a mother has to hand her baby out the window in the face of an oncoming bulldozer so that knowing she'll be killed, she can at least daven that her baby will survive? Is it existence being a people who are supposed to be a light unto the nations, but who suffer every day at the hands of those very same nations? Is that existence? In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, the whole world could come and see Hashem for themselves. We were the chosen people, and we lived in our Father's royal palace until He kicked us out. And if we don't have an existence that connects us to Hashem, it's like we're dead. We're not mourning for the Beis HaMikdash. We're not sitting on the chairs because we're sad for what happened. We're mourning for ourselves. We're not getting haircuts and not listening to music because we're almost dead. Perhaps that helps us understand when Chazal say that every generation that doesn't merit to have the Beis HaMikdash rebuilt is like they destroyed it. What? What did we do to destroy the Beis HaMikdash? Did we do the Sinas Chanan? And Chazal is telling us, you know what? If you don't find a way to get reconnected to Hashem, you're just as bad a shape as the people who got kicked out of the Beis HaMikdash 2,000 years ago. Chazal tell us that when you get to Shemayim after 120 years, you're going to have to answer three questions first. Now you might think those questions will be, did you keep Shabbos? Did you ever eat anything that wasn't kosher? Did you do a lot of chesed? Were you nice to people? Did you make a kiddush Hashem? No, those aren't any of the questions. One of the questions is very telling. Did you long for Mashiach? They're going to ask you when you get to Shemayim, you know what? You got kicked out. How bad did you want back in? So we have to daven. And we need to daven Tehillim. We need to take David HaMelech's lessons, his 150 lessons, plus his intense desire. And we need to take advantage of the time leading up to Tisha B'Av, when Hashem is looking in on His punished children, so to speak, to say, you know what we're doing here? Yes, we want back in. Look at us, Tat Din Himmel. We've selected a time when you are looking in on us. We're reaching out. We're trying to use the guidelines that David HaMelech gave us, and we're grabbing the coat of Avinu B'Shemayim and crying to let back in. We're davening Tehillim together, Be'achdus. We want back in the house. We want refuahs for our chaylim. We don't want, as Rabbi Rubin puts it so succinctly in his book on Tehillim, we don't want guns in Yerushalayim and bombs in Bnei Brak. We want the whole world to be able to travel by plane or car or boat and arrive in Yerushalayim and take the bus to Tzion and see for themselves the glory of Hashem. And pray in the base of Mikdash and hear the Levim sing while the Kohanim perform korbanos. And see millions of Jews arriving each Yontif to be Oleh Regel, and see farmers bringing the Bikurim tithe of their first fruits and stand there and feel the Shekhinah's presence. That's what we're doing here. That's what we're trying to do with our tefillos, our tehillim, and our Tisha B'Av. And maybe, if we do it well enough, we grow enough, and we show Avinu Shebashamayim our desire to be worthy of His glory, then Emir Tzashem, this will be the year that Tisha B'Av is celebrated joyously, with our chaylim cured, our troubles vanished, our wars over, and our people serving Hashem, along with the entire world, under the leadership of David HaMelech's descendant, Mashiach Tzidkenu. Thank you.